Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of Radio Golf Show. My name is Frank Forster, and we have a very special episode for you tonight. When you open one of my favorite golf books, True Links, by George Peeper and Malcolm Campbell, you will find a photo of the eighth green at Turnberry, decorating the foreword by Tom Watson. You'll find a photo of the 12th at Enniscrone, lending support to the author's prologue. But when you turn page one, and page one only reads True Links in bold green capital letters, you will be hit head on under the title Rare, Rugged, and Real, with a full page photo of the links at Royal Dornoch with its gorse in full bloom. Robert Gordon, in 1630, describes Dornoch as the fairest and largest links in any part of Scotland, fit for archery, golfing, riding, and all other exercises. They do surpass the fields of Montrose or St. Andrews. Tonight we have with us the general manager of Royal Dornoch Golf Club, Mr. Neil Hampton. Neil, thank you very much for taking the time to join us here on Radio Golf Show.
Frank, it's a wonder to be here, and I'm very much looking forward to our conversation. That's the best introduction to Royal Dornoch I've heard for a long time.
Well, it is what it is. Before we get started, I want to give thanks to Helma Scheffler, the managing director of Helma Scheffler Creative Communication, for hooking us up and arranging this this podcast for us. Rarely do you find in this profession a managing director who is not only a total professional but also a ton of fun to hang out with. So thank you, Helmer, for arranging this for us. Where do we start, Neil? There's so many things to talk about, maybe. Let's talk about the golf course first. What is said about the links, about that part of Scotland, the Highlands, back in 400 years ago, gave it this elusive charm of being out there. It almost instantly had this cult feeling. And when I look at what's going on with the Dornoch Golf Club, and hopefully you'll be able to talk about golf not just at Dornoch but in the Highland area in general, because it's not only you up there. What you as the GM, and I believe you've been the GM now since 2010, if I'm correct, what it seems to me is that you are future-proofing golf in the Highlands, not only Dornoch, but golf in the Highlands, specifically Dornoch, for the next 50 years. Would that be a fair statement?
Thank you, Frank. Yeah, I think I'm very much trying to make sure that there's a future, and golf clubs need a future. We're very lucky with the championship course and what we have and what it brings us. But that's only one style of golf. It's a beautiful, it's traditional, it's the most natural way to play the game. And the championship course is a unique test in itself. But what I'm thinking we need to do, and what to make sure that the Highlands, as you've rightly pointed out, needs to survive, is has a variety. It needs to offer more than just one style of golf or one type of golfer. We need to give a bit more. So whether you're young or you're old, or you have a lot of time or a little time, you want to practice. If you're a beginner, if you're an experienced golfer, we should offer that variety, whether it's
Apologies for that technical glitch, but we were just discussing how Neil is future-proofing the Highlands and Royal Dornoch for the next half century. Neil, apologies.
Yeah, so as I was saying, Frank, yeah, I think it's providing, as I was trying to describe, golf for all. So whether you're a championship player or a beginner, or you're a young player, an older player, if you have a lot of time, a little time, you want to practice, you want to take lessons, you just want to take in the views, if you want to, the scenery, if you just want to, play nine holes. I think it's our duty to provide that variety of golf and ensure that the game of golf itself survives, because we give enough options to the people out there. The world has changed a lot in the last few years, so it's up for us to make sure we adapt to it, and give the consumer what they want to have. And I think if we work hard together, with what we're doing at Roald Dornoch, plus what we're doing there elsewhere with the courses in the Highland, we can make our area a very popular and a very successful destination.
Is it links golf that makes it easier to make the courses attractive for different levels of players? I mean, when you look at the courses that are being built today, if you can't hit it 280, 100 off the tee, I've been playing golf for over 40 years. I never thought, imagined that people would continuously fly the ball 300 yards. But these old courses, the links courses, and we'll talk about Donald Ross, who was born in Dornoch. Is links golf an easier medium to make those build those kind of courses?
It certainly is. I think, links golf helps people because the ball runs further. I think that's a little bit, it's easier to manufacture and look after the golf courses because the grass is so natural. Being by the seaside, the land isn't as good for farming, so that's where the game started. And there's a lot of that. But to say that, there's a number of very good inland courses in the Highlands too. I think your point about how far people hit the ball is very valid. Unfortunately, it's only the top 0.01% of the players can do that, yet we seem to be adjusting the course to suit their style of play. I was having this discussion yesterday with a good friend of mine, saying that we still only hit the ball 240 yards, which we did 50 years ago. And we're, all the magazines say your driver will hit it 10 yards further, but that doesn't seem to be the case. So I think the average golfer isn't hitting the ball any further. So we need to be very careful about how we build the golf courses. But certainly, I know the links is a great advantage because the ball runs and runs and runs, whereas the inland and the parkland courses, it doesn't. And so that's a nice way to start the game. So if you don't get the ball too much in the air, it will still go a bit of a distance.
Right.
And I personally, in my thing, I think links golf is the best way to play the game. I do enjoy the odd parkland experience and going to the States now and again, but no, like you, I can't hit the ball 300 yards in the air, so I don't like that style of golf.
Yeah, it's funny that you say it, but I hit it 240 35 years ago when I was a scrapping young lad, and I don't hit it that anymore, but I hit 230. It's crazy. Neil, how would you define links golf?
How do I define links golf? It's a good question. Define links golf, it is not easy because it requires such a variety of shots. It requires so much imagination. It requires you to do many things, hit the ball high, hit the ball low. You have to understand spin and maneuver it in the air, or you don't have to. But define links golf, it's the game of the it's the way the game was started. It was the way it was invented. It's the most traditional way of playing. But it does allow variety, because as we've described, the parkland courses only invite you and allow you to play the one particular shot, and you're going to be one particular part of the fairway to access the right part of the green. Whereas links offers that variety of you hit it down the left hand side, I'll hit it down the right hand side, and we'll meet on the green in the middle, because there isn't that the hazards in the way that some of the parkland tree line courses have. So how do you describe it? I describe it as the most fun, because it requires the most variety in your game. If you don't have a variety, don't worry, you'll still find a way to get the ball on the green. There is no forced carries, there is always a route in, and there's a way to get the ball in the hole.
The fun factor, Tom Watson said of Royal Dornoch, it's the most fun I've ever had on a golf course.
And I believe that to be the case. And I think it's great when you read Tom Watson's stories. He was taken on this links journey by Sandy Tatum. They start in the southwest corner of Ireland, played all the Irish courses, jumped across to Scotland, and ended up in Dornoch. And it wasn't until he got to Dornoch that he really understood what playing links golf meant, how he had to create the shots, how he had to visualize different things. And that's what brought it home to him. And that's when he said he had the most fun, because it suddenly he got it, as we say. He got it, and he loves it all the time.
Right. My favorite part about links golf is that there aren't any trees, because
I would agree.
my golf ball is like a tree magnet. I grew up playing at what is now on the same on the same piece of land that the original Lido was on Long Island. And that was a golf course that ended in during World War II when it was used as an airport for planes. Dornoch had a similar experience with its golf course, which was used for planes and things like that, correct?
That's correct, Frank, and I think a fortuitous thing in our past, was what happened to our piece of land. It was very flat, part of our golf course. Half a dozen holes were on this piece of very flat land, and the government requisitioned it to park planes during the war so they could send them off to defend us. And there's a wonderful picture from our cathedral overlooking that piece of land, where there's almost 100 planes parked there waiting to go and do what they needed to do. So when the war ended, the government gave compensation to redo what all the mess they'd made. But it was our greenkeeper at the time said, "Well, that's not an interesting piece of land. It's the most exciting holes we've got on the golf course. But if you look to the other end of our golf course, there's another raised beach that we've used before, that we've played on. Why don't we try and use that and have a two-level golf course and instead?" And so there's a bit of variety in the height and the undulations rather than the flat piece. So people say that's a good idea. And so they managed to persuade George Duncan, the Open Champion of 1926, to come up. He laid out the holes. So we bought another five holes up there. And that is the and that then attached to the other holes are what the championship course is today. And I think it's very fortuitous that they did that, because I don't think we'd ever be near the top of the rankings like we are now with those flat holes still in play.
Yeah, and it's amazing. You're always at the top of these rankings, and you can say different things about rankings and how they're made and who makes them and everything like this. But you guys are always in the top 10 or top 15 worldwide. Why is that?
I'm too shy to say this because we're the best, but I think our golf course transcends all the different fads that you have during the game. In the 80s and 90s, as you say, the bomb it and then chip it on stuff was big stuff. We've just watched the players at Sawgrass, and Pete Dye has done some wonderful stuff, but that's a certain style of golf you have to play. I think, like you said, ours is the original. It's the way the game started, and so it's what people revert to when they think of what golf should be. And I think we're lucky that people like Mike Kaiser and Ben Cowan-Duer have taken us on to say, no, we understand what the best form of golf is, and we're going to try and enhance it, replicate it, and give more people the opportunity to play it.
Do many architects from around the world, from the States or from continental Europe, come up and see the courses up there to get inspiration? I mean, we have now man-made links golf courses just a few miles outside of Manhattan, that I don't know if they're links courses, but do you see architects? Well, I mean, I'm probably talking more about younger guys, but even guys like Ben Crenshaw and Bill Corr, who are phenomenal in golf course design. And I know Ben is also an honorary member at Royal Dornoch. Do they come up and get this inspiration? Do you
No,
see those guys
absolutely.
coming?
Yep, no, absolutely, Frank. And I think it's the point you made just during what you said is that the young ones starting their journey and learning their craft, they all come here to come and see it and understand what the best in the world is, to see what makes a golf course flow, to see how to interpret, short par fours, long par fours, par fives, and how undulations. Natural undulations can be used to your advantage when building a golf course. So yeah, we don't get a very famous one coming back. We get them all in the early part of their journey. And Tom Doak's a big fan of Dornoch, and he came early in his life to understand it, and Ben Crenshaw himself, when he was still a top player, came here early in his golfing architectural career to have a look. We're fortunate I've met Bill Coore a couple of times. And yes, they all want to have a look as they're starting out. And again, that's a very famous thing about Pete Dye. He went on his journey in his early golfing career in 1963 to travel around the UK to look at all the great links courses, and he ended up in Dornoch, and he himself said it's one of the best places in the world. And as a small aside, a number of years ago, a small letter landed on my desk, and in it was a little note and some photographs and some negatives. And this was Pete Dyce. He said, "Dear Neil, I'm clearing out my desk. I came across these and felt you may be interested." And it was all the photographs that he'd taken during his visit to Royal Dornoch in 1963. And he shared them with us, and there were some of the prints were there, and there was a lot more, including a negative. So we've printed them off and we use them. And it's amazing to see how similar the golf course is to it was back then. Yeah, and you know, and we can spot the changes in it, but there's very few. I mean, our bunkers are slightly deeper. There's a bit more gorse surrounding the outside of the fairway, but every single hole was just the same as when Pete played it, you know, nearly 70 years ago.
Wow. What kind of changes, but and when we go back to future proofing, what kind of changes do you make to the golf course to keep it challenging for everybody? Are you in a position, or do you even want to add length or have the gorse grow and make the fairways tighter? Or because to me, always, links golf is one thing because golf really is two games into one. It's the game from the tee to the green, and then it's the game on the green and around the green. Now I know many developers ask the architects to build very flat greens because they don't want people putting for 8 hours, and they want to collect the green fees. What do you do to the golf course to make it, to keep it modern, is maybe the word.
Yeah, no, and I think it's a very good question. And as you're asking the question, I'm thinking that we do very little. I think we've got such a good golf course. And the way I explain it to people about how good our golf course is that what you want to do is to get near the green as soon as you can, because that's where the most fun in Royal Dornoch Championship courses is around the green. Because we have the raised plateau greens, we've got the deep bunkers, we've got the runoff areas, we've got the quite big undulations in the green. Most fun is to be had around that. And it's not about the distance or or how long the course is or what you're playing. Some of our most fascinating holes, Frank, are our short par fours. Number five, called Hilton, is Tom Watson's favorite hole, and yet it's barely 340 yards in length because it adds that difficulty. For the men, it's stroke index 18, it's handicap 18. For the ladies, it's handicap one because of difficulty round the green. And I think that's fascinating, and something we're going to have a bigger discussion on about length in golf. Why we're making things longer, why we're not making them a bit trickier. And then, and the reverse of that point actually is when I first came to Dornoch, we were struggling with speed of play. You know, because we had a championship course, we felt that it had to be narrow, there ought to be lots of penal stuff off the fairway. You know, and people, as we've said about trees, you're hitting the ball into the bushes and the gorse and the rough, and you're losing it and you're dropping it and you're having to take more time. So by the time you get to the green and take your chips and putts around the green, it was taking a long time. What we've done, Frank, is cut away most of the stuff. Our rough is very light, and we thin it out a lot every year. We've cut back a lot of the gorse in the middle of the golf course. So people are going to say, actually, it's quite wide open off the tee. But still, the great joy in Dornoch is even if it's quite wide off the tee, you've still got to be in the right place in the fairway to attack a certain pin position. And so your accuracy is not about just getting it down a fairway; it's the right part of the fairway to it. So your second shot is going to land in the right part of the green to run close to the hole, and that's what I find the joy is in Dornoch. You can go out on 2 consecutive days in the same conditions and get all the bounces. And you get and hole all the putts, or next day you go out and you get none of the bounces and hole none of the putts, and yet it's the same course and the same player. And the golf we've talked about previously, the Bommett style, you don't get that variety in your play and the way the golf course handles you.
And you mentioned, and it's called the championship course. That there haven't been any professional majors at Royal Dornoch, but you did have the 1985 amateur
Yes.
championship. You had the 2022 senior amateur and senior women's amateur, and you will be showcasing your golf course at the 2028 Curtis Cup. Is there a Walker Cup in your future as well?
Oh, I do hope so, Frank. And that was one of the desires when I became the manager of the club, said we'd like to host the best of these events. And we've hosted a number from the R&A during my time, as well as the ones that you've mentioned. And I think what's key for us is that we're not so focused on professional events. We We are very keen to support the amateur game, as I said earlier on, about providing a range of facilities for the golfer. These are all amateur golfers we're talking about. We prefer that if we're going to host an event, it's the elite of the amateur game that we want to showcase our course to. And as you mentioned, the USGA have already put out a list of future venues of their future tournaments, and they are the top courses in the world, many of which haven't hosted a major, or if they did, it was a long time ago. And I think this is great for the amateurs to see what the best of golf in the world is before they head on their professional journey, and have to play the courses that are in front of them rather than choosing to play the courses they want to play.
Well, when you look at the golf courses that that have been chosen, and I think the USGA is they went all the way up to 2052 to name their golf courses, whereas the RNA has really taken their time. But you look at on the European side, you look at Lahinch, which is also an old Tom Morris course. You look at Prince's,
Yes.
right next to Royal St. George's, where the Open, I mean, borders on Royal St. George's, where they play the Open. It's the first time that Prince's will host the Walker Cup, and it seems that it might be a reward for their significant investment to the clubhouse and to go to 27 holes in recent year. You have the National Golf Links of America. You have Pine Valley, often in the top three of the golf courses. So I think that shows you the kind of company you guys keep. What's the process of becoming a Walker Cup or Curtis Cup venue?
It's throwing your hat into the ring and speaking to the Royal and Ancient Club and saying, look, we're interested. We'd like to be a venue. We want to be a supporter of the game. And all you do is, as we're doing everything, keep networking with them, keep speaking to them, keep doing the right things in the game of golf. And we've been successful in hosting a number of events for them. And I'd like to think that the conclusion of our new clubhouse and the fact that that was online when the decision for the Curtis Cup was made, cemented that decision to bring that to us. I'd like to hope that if we're successful in running a good event, a very top class event in 28 for the ladies, the women, sorry, then that we may be in the frame for the next Walker Cup, which will be 2034. I mean, I was delighted for Rob McGurk and his team at Prince's to get the 2030 Walker Cup. I think that's just rewards, as you said, what they've done investing in their golf courses and their golf facilities. So I'd like to think maybe, 2034, it's due to come back to Scotland then. Maybe it's our turn to host it there. But we're looking forward to the Curtis Cup and making that a great success.
Right. But your hat is in the ring for the Walker Cup 2034.
Very much, yes.
There you go. That's what I want to hear. That's what we need to hear. Ben Crenshaw was on the show, and when I learned that you have a restaurant on your premises called Crenshaw's Brasserie, I wrote him last night, and I asked him what his favorite item on the menu is at Crenshaw's Brasserie. He couldn't tell me, but he told me that when he's in Augusta for the Masters, he goes to Luigi's to eat. So maybe you want to look at that menu at Luigi's and surprise with something in Scotland. You mentioned the clubhouse, and one thing that's fascinating to me is how many people live in Dorna?
About 2,000.
2,000. And we were fortunate enough to have one of your junior members, Zara McDonald, on the program and play golf with her here in Germany when she was here on an internship. I think this might be a good time to mention Ally McNaughton, who has just been named one of the top 50 kids coaches in the world. That falls in line with what you just said about the amateur game. I think you're very much involved in promoting the game to young people in your area. Coming back to Dornoch being a 2,000 souls a town, and the charm that initially was that it's somewhere up there in the Highlands. I mean, I don't know, what is it, latitude 57 degrees north? I mean, we're talking
That's
about Hudson Bay. We're
it.
talking about way up there. That was part of the charm. And part of the charm, I'm sure, also was this town, small town of 2,000 people. And again, I want to use Zara as an example. When we played with her 18 holes here in Germany on a golf course that's okay, And I asked her, I said, tell me about Dornoch and things like this. And what do you think of this place? And she was so gracious. You would probably expect if it was somebody from America to say, yeah, this place is a piece of shit. And yeah, it's a meadow, things like that. She was so gracious. And the way she talked about the golf club that she was a guest at and her home course, which is one of the top courses in the world, was phenomenal. Okay, at some point there was a bifurcation where Dornoch appealed to foreigners, not just the local people. Were there difficulties or situations where some of the folks in town, some of the locals, were not too happy about this influx and especially of money into that area?
No, not at all, Frank. I don't think so. I think that the prosperity of our golf club is a very recent thing. It's not until people like Ben Crenshaw and Tom Watson have come and played and gone away and said how good it is, that we've really seen this the number of people coming that they have in their volumes in recent times. So money was always tight at the golf club. We didn't have a lot of it, and so one way of generating income is to have members. And we're, as you've highlighted, not that easily accessible. So if somebody's come this far, come to Dornoch, then they know a bit about the game, they understand a bit more, they've done the research. So therefore they're not just a box tick person. They are somebody, an aficionado who understands the game. So when they come and play and say, can we join, would it be great? And they say, absolutely. Here's a form, fill in that. And that really is as simple as it was. And golf is a very egalitarian sport in Scotland. It's a game for everyone. So if you come to our place and would like to be part of it, then why shouldn't we let you join? We've done well out of that. We've over 900 overseas members. We've got 2,300 members in total. And that's great. And we still have the ethos that the sport's for everyone. So whether it's a member or a non-member, you can still get a game of golf at Dornoch every day of the week. So it's the town understands very much what the game of golf brings to it, how that the economy is driven by it, and what else the game can bring to us. It's that little bit of extra stuff that people with a bit of money, which is nice to have. Our friends come and spend a bit of cash in town, and that keeps us all going. East Sutherland, where we are in this part of Scotland, Frank, really struggles for any kind of industry at the moment. So we're seeing a lot of depopulation of our young people moving away because there is no jobs. And so golf is something special to not just Dornoch, but other towns in the area, because that's what keeps the thing alive. That's what keeps people coming. And we're lucky to have so many good golf courses in a small radius that can help do what we do and provide the jobs and the income for the town and the area itself.
Are you involved in any kind of cross marketing with other industry sectors in the area? I'm thinking, of course, of whiskey, number one. I would assume folks either come to play golf. I mean, when I go on a golf trip with my buddies, whether it's we go to Kiowa Island or we go to Doral or whatever, we play golf for 3 or 4 days, we stay on the golf course, we play one golf course, and we go back home. But I'm sure there are people, and God bless them, that want to make it a bigger experience than golf, whether it's trips to I don't know what. Can you talk a little bit about what else that area, and maybe even mention some of the other courses? I know that you're involved with a project called Golf Highland. The website is golfhighland.com. So it's not just about you. I mean, it's really a cumulative effort of promoting the region.
It is, Frank, and we work closely with a number of industries. You've mentioned the whiskey and Glenmorangie, a very famous whiskey, is distilled only 5 or 6 miles from us. So we've always partnered with those people. The local hotels and restaurants we know very well. The other golf courses you've mentioned within 30 minutes of us, there's Tay and Golspie and Brora, fantastic links courses in their own right. Travel a bit further, you get to Wick and Durness and Gearlock and places that are again scenically unique. And I think it's another thing that we want to talk about here. It's not just the golf itself. It's the relaxation you take in the scenery and the views. It's some of the freshest, cleanest air you can have. There's very little light pollution. The Northern Lights, for example, have been out in force over the last 6 months of our winter. I mean, there's some beautiful walks. We've got some amazing beaches. If you walk, go into the hills, this is why Andrew Carnegie developed Skibo Castle. Within half an hour, he's way up in the top of a mountain. Another half an hour, he's down by the beach playing golf. So we have everything you can need in a very short travel distance. But we have some of the friendliest people, and we have some of the best food, and we have some of the best whiskey. So why wouldn't you want to come to base yourself rather than going to Doral? Why not come and base yourself in Dornoch and
I
play a
totally agree.
variety of golf courses and drink a variety of whiskey and eat a variety of great Scottish food and have a much better time, Frank?
Yeah, I'm totally with you. I mean, Doral, that was in my youth. I think we got arrested for stealing a golf cart and driving local 7-Eleven. That was a long time. I think that they definitely can't get me for that anymore. But I mentioned you're so far north. How many hours of sunlight do you have in the summer?
Well, in the summertime, the sun will come up approximately 3:30, and the sun doesn't go to bed till about 11:30 at night.
So 36 is no problem.
36, 54. Some people
54
play 72.
in a day.
I mean, when we were young kids, Frank, it was the best thing ever because there was none of this internet and social media. So we just spend our summer holidays down at the golf course every day. It was and golf was so free and easy, which it still is. And it was great to be there. It's a very safe environment, as golf courses look after each other, and people look after you. So it's a wonderful way to spend your formative years, and the game gives you back so many more things as you grow older.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned your membership. I believe it was 900 members from outside of Scotland, and another 1,200, 1,300 from inside. As far as your Greenfeet crowd, are you talking mainly about folks that come to you through tour operators, or is it just guys showing up and making their reservation on your website?
There's a nice mix of both, Frank. And I would say we're lucky. We're not heavily reliant on tour operators. Or just over a third of our business comes from the tour operator market, and the other two thirds are independent travellers. But we do have a very close relationship with our tour operators. We know that they do a lot of marketing, consciously and unconsciously, on our behalf. We know a lot of people will get websites to see where they go on to go on holiday and then book independently. But we do work closely with them. We've just had a number of them up over the last weekend to show our new clubhouse to them and to discuss our forward thinking and our new facilities. And they're all like, we are very excited about what the future can bring to our golf club.
Yeah, let's talk about the clubhouse. That was some project. I've just seen pictures of the old clubhouse and then pictures of the new clubhouse. It's quite a change. I've seen numbers of 12, 13, 14 million pounds that the clubhouse cost. Obviously, the clubhouse is an integral part of any golf course. Somebody once told me that if you can make the experience at the golf club with the course in the clubhouse just a tiny bit better than your home, then you got folks coming back. This was a guy who ran a golf club, and he had a big sign at the front door that said "Welcome home." So, tell us about that. And I don't want to stir any controversy, but was the membership immediately convinced that yes, we need that in order to keep growing?
No, our membership and members clubs are a difficult thing to get over the line when it comes to the off course facilities. Everyone wants to invest in a golf course and make it the best, and that's never been an issue. But building a clubhouse is a very emotive subject for some, and it really is. It's quite relevant for everyone. So it took us a long time. I've only been here 15, 16 years, but we know that the clubhouse discussions was going on a long time before that. And so part of my remit was to help them get the clubhouse over the line, and we'd several false starts during my tenure. But it did become apparent that as we grew the business of the club, which was again one part of my remit to make sure that we had more people coming to make the economy, something of our business, very viable, then these visitors weren't getting the same service off the golf course as they were on the golf course. Our staff were all highly trained, the food we provide, the ambiance we give is great, but the clubhouse was originally built in 1909, and so it was built and extended and grew over that period. So doing that makes it a very difficult building to manage. It makes it very old. It gives a lot of maintenance issues. And while the views in the main lounge were tremendous, there wasn't many of them. You know, the locker rooms and changing rooms were dated and difficult to maintain, difficult to upgrade. Our back of house facilities were very small. And it's not until what I started doing for some of our committee members was when they were inducted into being part of the committee, I took them for a tour behind the scenes. And that's when all of them went, "My goodness, I've been a member for 30 years and never realized how bad it was back here." Because they ever only ever saw the front-facing facilities. So during all this process and the fact that we're generating more cash and we're all saying we're charging a lot more money, we need to provide better facilities. And it took a bit of time, Frank, but we eventually got there. The start was in 2012 with a project, but we'd have to borrow money, and the members didn't want to borrow money. So we were putting some cash reserves away and said, "Let's build a driving range." So we went to the members in 2016 and said, "Here's a proposal for a very fantastic driving range, which will cost you £2 million." And they went, "Ah, if we spend £2 million, Frank, we'll never get our clubhouse." "Ah, so you want a clubhouse?" We said, "Right." So that's 2017 is when the most recent project started in earnest. And I have to say, we sold it to the members on the fact that we wouldn't levy them, there wouldn't be any extras that they would have to pay. This money would come from the reserves that we built up. And I think that helped get it over the line. So that's where we were in 2017. We're ready to go to tender in 2020. But as we know, the world slowed down a bit then. And so the project paused and restarted in November 22, which was a good thing. We had made some decisions prior to COVID, which we reevaluated after COVID, and I think we've ended up with a much better clubhouse, a much more sustainable clubhouse, a greener clubhouse, and that's the interior. We changed a lot between the two designs, and so we have one that really reflects us as people, reflects our history, and reflects what Dornoch really symbolizes in the way it behaves. And I like to think that, when people come into it, as they have done since we opened in December last year, everyone, and I mean everyone, Frank, has said, "Wow, this is amazing. Can't believe that this is ours. I can't believe that you've created something as good as this, something with the quality, the fixtures, the fittings, just the touch and feel of everything is so amazing." And they've all said, as you've mentioned a number there, that it's worth the money. Everyone questions what you're spending, but they've walked in and said, "No, you've done something quite amazing, and it was worth you spending the money."
Money is only an issue in the absence of value.
That is correct.
There you go. Congratulations on that. I think it's fantastic. I've seen pictures on it of it, and it looks like it's, well, I shouldn't say it looks like it's been there forever, but it looks like it fits right in there, to me,
Well, that
in
was
the
a
outside.
big part of the brief to the architect was that we wanted something that was in keeping with the existing architecture of Dornoch. We said to him, "If you cast your eye over the skyline, the rooftops of Dornoch, it shouldn't stop at our new clubhouse. It should carry on because it fits into that landscape." And that's very much what we want. So the exterior looks like it's been there forever, whereas the interior looks very, very new and very, very with it for what we're trying to do. But it exemplifies our history. You'll understand who we are, where we came from, the people involved, but you'll also get the best of quality and the best of service and the best of 21st century technology.
Two topics. One, you mentioned sustainability. You guys have issues with beach erosion and things like that.
A little bit, yeah. I mean, the way the world has changed and some of the storms we've had in recent years have made us think a lot about that. But we're investing in that. We've taken on a team of consultants to do a lot of monitoring of the way that the coastline ebbs and flows. And through that, they're going to model how it may change in the future. So that, again, a part of our forward thinking is that while we may not have any issues right now, we know that things will maybe happen in the future, and we want to be prepared so that people come to work at Dornoch and live in Dornoch after us have the data and the modelling to understand what they need to do to still have a championship golf course and still have a place to play golf. So we think part of our remit is not to think about the here and now, it's to think about the future, and we're trying to do that with many things, and our coastal erosion is one of them.
Other than the championship course, which also in my opinion is a true links because it has nine holes going out to the furthest point and then the other nine coming back to the clubhouse, which might not be the most popular with people these days who just go out to play six or whatever, nine holes or whatever. But you have another course that is fully operational. Can you tell us a little bit about that course?
Yeah, so that was, as it's unfortunately a bit of a mongrel course, Frank. It's been many things during its iterations, and 1899 was when it first started, and back then it was termed the Ladies' Course. It was 9 holes, and it's been extended to 12, to 18, back to 9. It disappeared for a number of years. It became reinvented again, and back in the late 1990s, we got a proper 18-hole course back again. And so we've been a 36-hole facility since that point. We've added, part of the changes that we made in the 2000s gave us an extra 3 holes. So we have a 3-hole academy loop, as we call it. But yeah, our Strewey course, because it's named after the set of hills you can see as you play it, the Strewey, is really fantastic. It's a complete contrast to the championship course, where the championship course has a lot of undulations. It's got the raised plateau greens. It's got the deep bunkers. It's got the wide fairways, as we've said. Strewey is different. It's quite a bit shorter, about 400 yards shorter, but the fairways are narrow. The greens are certainly much smaller, and slightly less undulations, which makes it a much trickier course to play. We think, when you mentioned the senior amateur there, all the lowest scores were on a championship course because the players understood it and could play it. What we like and what we've discussed earlier today, Frank, is it's because it's that bit shorter, it doesn't make it that much easier. And you very much your short game, your pitch and runs, your chipping, your bunker play had to be on high quality to score around the Strewey, because you're going to ask those questions a lot. I mean, you can miss a lot more greens in the Strewey than you do in the championship course. And so while it has those varieties, and it's great for us because it's a bit shorter, and we will get around it a bit quicker and we won't be so tired. It does stretch your game in different ways.
I understand that you're planning a third course.
Yes,
What
again,
is the status of that?
future proofing and trying to leave something that people can do. It's, like I said at the beginning, I've been around member clubs for a long time, and most member clubs are driven by the committee and the captain, and it's what their desires are. But as we know, these people are only in position for 2 or 3 years, and because, so then nothing is long term. It's what I would like to do, and then I'm gone, and somebody else can do something else. So I've seen that all through my career, Frank. So I felt it was a time to say, what can we do in the future? How are we going to use everything that we have to the best effect? There's too many times I've seen something getting constructed and 5 years later it gets dug up because somebody wants to change it. So I said, well, why don't we put in a master plan? Why don't we look at all the land that we have that's available? Because we've a number of pieces of land that aren't golf at the moment. But how can we utilize all that for the best? As I've said, I want to provide golf for everyone, young and old, beginners, championship players, practicers. Whatever it is, I want you to be able to do it, Dornan. So we went out to a team of architects with that brief to say, here's the 800 acres that we have, some of which is golf course, some of which isn't. Tell us what we can do with that. You guys have been around the world. You've seen many various things. What would you fit at Dornoch that suits us? And so it was great to see the ideas that came back. We had 9 different architects that submitted designs and ideas to us, but only one really, in fact, no. Let's say it right. One had the inspiration. They had those ideas and imagination that were so much different from the rest, that really utilized every single piece of land for in what we thought was the best way. So it involves a brand new third course, and it's on land that is not golf at all. So we've got about 300 acres that is not golf course. So when we build this golf course, it won't disturb anything else.
Is that
Once,
land that you had to procure,
yeah.
or that, or okay, so you had to buy the land.
Yeah, no, we had the land back in 1999. There's a local landowner was selling up. He was a member of the golf club. He
So the
says,
land
well,
was there.
do you want this piece of land? We said, yes. Don't know what we're going to do with it, but we had it. So our great foresight back then by the people before us to say, let's buy it. And now we've got the opportunity to really use it. So the first thing we're going to do is build this brand new third course. And everybody asks, and I'll say the same thing. It'll give us a third variety of golf to play. While still links in style, it'll be a different theme to the championship course and the Strewey course. So when you come, Frank, you'll be able to play 3 18 holes and all different, a different method of playing, a different test to your skills. So that's what we're going to do first. And from that allows us then to build a driving range. It allows us to upgrade the Strewey course to some more new holes, and it allows us to put in an 18-hole par 3 course. We're going to look at short game areas and better putting greens as well. And so, as I've alluded to, the variety of golf you can play, and it'll take us 20 years possibly, probably, to complete it all. But by that time, we'll have such a variety and such a great great interest of things to do indoor, no? Then there's no reason to leave. You can come for a week or 10 days or a fortnight and do so many different things, all golf related.
Right. What is the time frame on that third course?
So we're going through the planning permission stages at the moment. I'd like to think that, and I'm pretty confident we'll get that done by the end of the year. And so once we've had a detailed design and costings and get member approval, all things being equal and all the ducks in a row, we'll start construction probably the end of next year, end of 27. And that means we'll be finished by 29, a bit of growing period. So if we get all the right weather conditions, Frank, play golf in 2030, maybe 2031.
There you go.
That's that. That's an aspirational timeline, but something that is achievable.
Right. Which one of the nine bidders won the bid, if I may ask? Is that
It's a company that I'd really never heard of. It's
okay?
King Collins Dormer. They're an American company, and they are, when I did my research, they're now the up and coming boys on the block. They are getting involved in some of the best projects, and because they're of this the theme we talked about, they've seen links. They see the style of golf that should be played and how to play it, but they're very hands-on. These guys are so excited about coming to work the land themselves. What they've seen in our virgin piece of land is that we don't have to do much to it to make it a golf course. There's not big earth movers coming in, there's a bit of shaping, but they see a lot of features in it that several of the other architects did not. And so we were so excited by their imagination, and we're also so excited by their excitement. These guys are over the moon to be working in Scotland, and
Super.
they can't stop talking about it.
There you go. And I think that's exactly also the philosophy of Coore and Crenshaw, is to move as little dirt as possible in order to build a golf course. Where am I going to stay when I do come up there?
Where are you going? If you don't stay with me, Frank,
I'm
because
talking about, okay, where are all the folks that come up there? I was thinking today, my God. First of all, I want to say this. I went to your website, and I believe the green fee now is £320. Is that around it?
it was 320 last year, 360 this year.
360, yeah. Which, when you compare it to the other golf courses that are in your league, quite reasonable.
Thank you. We like to think that, and we don't like to push the envelope, as you would say, by pushing the green fee too high. We still think the game is for everyone, and we like to make it accessible as much as we can.
And you got the super discounts for the locals and the juniors.
Absolutely.
I was thinking, my God, how far out do I have to go to book a tee time? Which month are you booked for the whole year for the championship course?
So we're about to open in a month's time, middle of April 26. We're going to open a tee sheet for 27.
Ah, there you
And
go.
so by the end of this year, by the end of 26, 27 will be mostly full. So
Okay.
you start planning ahead, Frank.
Well, there you go. As far as where folks stay, I mean, one thing for me personally that's always very important when I go on one of these trips is to stay as close to the golf course as possible. Do you have a hotel on the premises, or are they in the town, or what does that look like?
So the good news for you, Frank, is that we don't own any hotels, but we have one hotel whose address is the first tee at Royal Durham. So the Royal Golf Hotel, part of the Highland Coast Hotels group, overlooks the first tee. So by the time you get out of your bed and take about 10 steps, you'll be on the first tee ready to go. And they have a number of rooms that overlook the whole golf course. So it is stunning to pull the curtains back and see what's in front of you for the day.
There you go. Well, that's good enough for me. 10 steps. I was told that you, the GM of Royal Dornoch, that you, how many people you have working there on staff?
Well, this season we're going to be up about 80 this season. It's grown quite a lot as we've grown our business. So yeah, and there's about 60 permanent staff, but another 20 or so come seasonally to help. So it's getting to be a big animal now.
And I heard that you personally write personal birthday cards to each one of the staff members,
Yes.
which I think is fantastic because this top-down management, whatever you want to call it, if that's reflected from the top down and every employee shows it, your guests feel that right away. I feel it when I go to a club here. whether the people like to work there and whether it's managed well. It's all work all comes together. But you can't write 80 birthday cards to people you don't know.
Well, I like to think we do though, and part of the induction process to be a staff member with us is you spend 2 or 3 hours with me, and I talk you through the, the some of the legal stuff we have to do, but we talk about who we are as people, how we want to interact with each other, first of all, and how we're going to interact with the customers. So every staff member calls me Neil. I'm not Mr. Hampton or the general manager. I'm Neil, and I call them by their first name. If I see you at Frank, I'll call you Frank, and that's what we encourage them to do. If they feel relaxed about who they're working with, they'll feel more relaxed about working with a customer. And it's important that we give the ethos of who we are as people in Dornoch and who we are as a club. A lot of people come to us, Frank, as a Royal Golf Club, as a top 10 course in the world, are quite nervous. They're a little bit apprehensive. It's been a life's dream for them. So we have to encourage and train and make sure the staff break down those barriers at the very first instance. And you can see the people when we start calling, you come up to see us and Mr. Forster, yeah, oh, your tee time at 10:40. Yeah, oh, nice to have you here. I'm glad you could come. We're looking forward to having you. You start conversations like that, and you see people relax so much. You see the color come back in their face, and you see the sweat dry up in their forehead, and they go, "Oh, they want me to be here." And that's sometimes what you don't get at some of the bigger clubs is that feeling that they want you to be there. They know you need to be there to pay them money, but do they want you to be there? And that's the thing you get to the staff is every customer is the same. Whether you're a member, you've been for 50 years, or a visitor, your first visit, you'll get treated exactly the same way and the right way that we want you to do it.
And I also heard that the employees are members of the club.
Absolutely, yeah. That's one of the benefits of being there is you get to be a member. And there's something, again, golf is to be shared. One of my ethos is it's not ours to keep, it's ours to share. So the more people we have playing the golf course, the more people can talk knowledgeably about it, the more people will come and see it.
It's not rocket science. Why don't many more clubs do it? Which is what I don't understand. Because the people feel it. What else did I want to ask you? I got those folks out of the way. Nightlife in Dornoch. Let me speculate and ask you a hypothetical question. How many rounds did you play on the championship course last year?
32,000.
No, you yourself.
Me, oh golly, about 30 probably.
30. So you still have time to go out there. That's
Yeah.
wonderful.
Yeah.
That's wonderful because I talk to GMs or other people and, oh, I haven't played in 3 years. That is
No,
good.
no. I
That's
was very lucky at my interview back in 2010, Frank, that when they offered the job, they said, "Well, we expect you to play. We expect you to play with some of the visitors and expect you to play with some of the members." And so a lot of my rounds, 30 that I've mentioned there, are maybe not my own social games, but they are games in a social
games.
environment with the people that come. So it's great fun to do. And I don't do as much as I would like, but then nobody ever does.
You make them social. That's the way I picture it. But back to the hypothetical question. You win the club championship at Dornoch.
Ooh.
Oh.
Ooh.
And you celebrate in a karaoke bar
All
in
right.
Dornoch.
Okay.
What song would you begin the night with, and what song would you end it with?
Oh my goodness. Wow. These are great questions.
Obviously, you've been to a karaoke bar, otherwise you and it took Ben Crenshaw 2 minutes of silence to answer this question, but he did.
Oh, heavens. I don't think even after 2 minutes, Frank, I could do that. I mean, I have a lot of musicians and bands that I like, but would I, heavens, these are great questions. The first two things, I couldn't win the club championship, and I've only never been to a karaoke bar. But I'm not sure would spend too long on this podcast for me to think of what music it would be, but it would be something
I'll have
joyful. It would be something like a couple of rock songs there, maybe a bit of Elton John. That
Oh.
kind of, I'm more of a 70s, 80s kind of guy when it comes to music. So,
am I. But I would request the Proclaimers. I think that would be appropriate. Folks, there is all these things that you need to check out. Number one, you need to check out the website of the Royal Dornoch Golf Club. You need to check out golfhighland.com for the association that Neil is part of, which promotes golf in the Highlands. You have to check out highlandcoasthotels.com. It's amazing. It's you'll be, because you don't know what to expect, and it so you don't really have any expectations. But if you do have any expectations, they're far they're crushed by what you will see on these websites. Neil, thank you very, very much for your time. I know you're super busy. Congratulations on what you've achieved there in the last 15, 16 years. May the next 15 years be equally successful. And obviously we look forward to the Curtis Cup and maybe the Walker Cup and just putting the game that we all love in a place that must be magical, and to shine a light on it. Thank you very much for being here today.
Frank, you've been very kind. I've really enjoyed our conversation. I think talking golf is great fun, and I think we should do more of it. So thank you for the invite, and I've really enjoyed meeting you, Frank.
Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, our thanks goes once again to Neil for his time and his unbridled enthusiasm for the game that we love, which is something one might take for granted, but these days, sadly, one cannot. We will leave you tonight with this quote from our dear friend, Malcolm Duck. Neil is one of the good guys in the world, and Dornoch is one of the great golf courses in the world. Go visit. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. To the Linksland.